Hello, everyone. This is Carlos Castellanos. I'm the co-creator of the nationally syndicated comic strip Baldo and founder of Drawn by Success. And today, on this installment of the Drawn by Success creative interview series, we are speaking with the one and only Chad Carpenter, creator of the Tundra comic strip. Now, Tundra is the most successful self-syndicated comic strip in history. I believe they've got over 500 clients. And together with Chad Carpenter, we have Mr. Bill Kellogg, which is Chad's marketing manager, director of sales. And we're going to be speaking about the comic strip, its success, and the industry. We'll also be covering a seminar that Chad and Bill are putting together. It's called Success in Comics, and we'll explore that as well. Bill and Chad, are you gentlemen on?
Yep. Hello there.
So Chad, tell me a little bit about your Tundra comic strip, how it got started. What was your life before that?
Well, I started drawing Tundra 21 years ago, so I was in my mid-20s. And at that point, I thought my real job was going to be being a state trooper here in Alaska, and because that's what my dad did, and that's just where my interest lied. But I also liked doing cartoons, and but I never really thought I could make a living at it until I moved to Sarasota, Florida when I was 18, just kind of on a whim, just to kind of go down there and check out the art scene. And it was while I was down there, I happened to live in the same town as a gentleman who did Hagar the Horrible, Dick Brown, and of course, the gentleman who did Mother Goose and Grimm, who still does Mother Goose and Grimm, I should say, Mike Peters. And after meeting those two guys and them kind of helped me out onto the road of cartooning, I realized that's what I really rather do is be holding a pen in my hand than a gun. Too goofy to carry a gun. I think everybody's safer.
Well, I also live in Florida, and I must say there's a huge climate difference between Alaska and Florida. What got you back to Alaska?
It's home. It's home. And, you know, I've lived other places too, but every time I've moved away from Alaska, I always miss Alaska. I miss the mountains. I miss the expansive, you know, just lack of people, I guess is the best way to say it. I like the lack of people. And it's really it's a beautiful place. Hard to beat it, especially in the summer.
I just give a little backstory on what's going on right now. It's 7 a.m. as we're doing this interview in Alaska, and Chad is actually driving to an Anchorage mall where Bill tells me he goes every year for, like, I think the last 2 months. Is that correct, Chad?
Yeah, it's about from Thanksgiving till Christmas Eve. So it's like about a month long. And, yeah, it's a daily experience, and sit there for about 12 hours a day signing books and selling calendars and just basically trying to, you know, make as much money as I possibly can before the Christmas season's over when everything quiets down and you have to, you know, live on your reserves after that.
Right. So, how long are you in the car driving to these malls?
It's an hour each way.
Wow.
So it's like a 14-hour day every day for 30 days straight. It's a bit of
that's dedication, man.
Greg. Well, it's greed is what it is. You know, I'm like a squirrel. You got to pack away the food for the winter so you have, you know, food to survive on in the spring. So, and I enjoy it. I really do love it. It's my favorite time of year. And I just really enjoy the interaction with people. And I enjoy finding out what people like and which strips they like, which ones they like to complain about. And it gives me a good idea of, you know, where to go for the rest of the year as far as putting other projects together, like books and calendars and all that. I really get a lot out of interacting with the people. Sometimes it's, you know, it's not as easy because, I'm very accessible to people, so they can tell me whatever the heck they want. So if they have a complaint, they go right to my face. But at the same time, it's nice to get good feedback, too, which is 99% of it's good feedback.
Yeah, there's always that 1%, right, that we love
so
much.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, those are the ones you remember the best, or the 1% that complain, because those make for the best stories.
Those are the ones we get to put up on Facebook.
There you go.
Exactly.
When you started developing the strip, did you think, or, you know, from the beginning, okay, this is my goal is to be syndicated? What were you thinking about when you first started?
When I first started, I still didn't take it seriously like I was going to make a career out of it. I just was doing it as a hobby, and it was kind of fun. And I enjoyed the small bit of notoriety I got from, you know, being a cartoonist. And But it wasn't until my first book came out, about a year into it, I came out with my very first book, and we self-published 3,000 copies, and it was a very small book. It was like a regular-sized Garfield book, and it was small, and did a 3,000 print run, and we sold out in 6 weeks, and
wow.
That's when I realized, my God, people actually buy this stuff. Maybe there's something here. So that got me thinking about a career after that.
And were you in papers at that point?
Yeah, I was in the Anchorage Daily News. That was the one paper I was in at that point. And the only reason I got in there is I hit them on a good day. I walked into their office and I said, here's some of my stuff. Will you run it? And the editor looked at it and he goes, yeah, well, maybe we'll give it a try. And that was in 1991. So that's kept on going. But after Anchorage picked it up, then I got picked up by Fairbanks and Juneau and Sitka and some of the other cities around here in Alaska. So technically I was self-syndicated, but I really had no real aspirations to go any further than that. I thought it would be cool, you know, and I certainly tried to get syndicated through the regular method of sending letters out to the syndicates, but never really took it seriously until Bill came along, and obviously Bill was unemployed and needed money, and he wasn't going to make it on his own, as he likes to say. So he decided to hitch his star to my rising wagon, or vice versa. My dyslexia is kicking in there. But
as long as one of them was rising.
Yeah, that's right. But it wasn't until Bill came along that it actually kind of blossomed into a big ulcer-causing career. That was 15 years into it. I'd been doing it for 15 years in Alaska only. And so it was in 2005 or 2006 when Bill showed up.
What was the most amount of papers that you had been in before Bill had come along?
5 or 6. And I was able to make a good living because I had a lot of books and calendars and T-shirts, and I realized that merchandise was where the money was. And if I wanted to keep doing it to make a living, I'd have to really crank out the merchandise. So just on the local market alone, I was able to do pretty good. But it wasn't until Bill came along that totally ruined any chance of me ever playing golf again because I'm way too busy now.
So how many papers are you guys in now?
Take that one, Bill.
Right around 530.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, that's within Canada, U.S., and overseas, I would imagine. Are you guys overseas anywhere?
We're overseas a little bit. King Features handles, I handle U.S. and Canada, and King Features handles overseas now. And I think they picked up about, I don't know, maybe 10 papers or so. Does that sound about right, Chad?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
But there's some
mostly in like a... Oh, good. I was just going to say, it's mostly in like the Norwegian, Sweden, Germany market, in those Scandinavia and Northern European countries.
Yeah, other than Trinidad and Tobago and Kingston, Jamaica.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Bill, you know, there's a lot of talk about how newspaper editors aren't open to buying strips from creators if they're syndicated. What kind of hurdles did you, or roadblocks did you have to overcome in selling Tundra to newspaper clients?
Right. That was probably the biggest hurdle that I had, aside from not having any clue what I was doing in the first place. The biggest thing I heard from editors was they don't pick up self-syndicated people, and then the reasons why. So it was stuff we had to get around, you know, because there are so many folks who have done it so wrong before. And by wrong, I mean, you know, some of the things the editors told me is, you know, there's, of course, horrible spelling, and people who are self-syndicated, they don't have editors, so there's no spell checks, there's no grammar checks, there's no checks on foul language, there's no checks on, you know, like local regionalized cartoon that has nothing to do with whatever area you're trying to sell it to. I heard stories of, you know, they picked up a self-syndicated person. That guy decided to go on vacation for a few weeks and didn't send us any strips and didn't tell us. And I mean, just all kinds of things. So the hardest thing for me, on that kind of scale, I mean, on the nationally, was to get over, you know, to convince editors that, hey, we're not like this. We're just like the regular syndicate. And, you know, we do have an editor. We do have, we do check it. We don't put foul language in. We don't put, you know, they talked about some people putting rants in about somebody they didn't like in their comic strip, you know, that kind of stuff. So Chad doesn't do that. He just calls it in person and tells me how much he hates me.
So he leaves the comic strip clear for humor and not for personal attacks on you. That's good.
Right. Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah. But the first big paper we got helped because, you know, I would start using that, like, look, we're in this paper. And actually probably the biggest one that helped us was the LA Times, because that's the largest paper in the country that has comics. And when I would tell other newspapers, well, look, we're in all these papers and we're in the LA Times, I mean, would you try and explain it that way? But truthfully, it's not over. I mean, there are still papers that won't pick us up because we're self-syndicated. And there's not a lot of them anymore. And we've managed to get into quite a few of them over the years that originally told me no, because we're self-syndicated, they don't pick up self-syndicated strips. But a lot of it is a safety in numbers thing, and it's a safety in size thing. So, you know, when you're in five papers in Alaska and you go out there and they're like, we don't do self-syndicated paper comic strips. When you're in 500 papers, including, you know, some of the biggest ones in the country, then you can say, hey, we're in 500 papers. We're in this one, and, you know, start naming, you know, Denver and L.A. and Seattle and Pittsburgh and all these places. And then they start, that one sort of goes away. And, you know, getting in the papers is still a long, tedious thing anyway, but at least, you know, I can, you know, after we picked up a few hundred papers, probably 200 papers, and we had a couple bigger-ish papers, that really helped a lot. And that helped the ones that were on the fence anyway. There's still several of them that won't pick us up because we're self-syndicated and they just don't do self-syndicated strips.
Being new to the market, what kind of research did you do to find out what the rates were?
Well, what I did is, first of all, I'd ask, because the editors, you know, in the beginning I had no idea and I didn't want to undersell, because that's where I make my money. So, and you can't oversell or they won't buy it. So, Some of the editors, there are some editors out there who are just super, super nice people and super helpful. And so I would just say, you know, I would just come out and ask, you know, what do they generally go for and, you know, how is it based on? But also very early on, I had one editor who shall remain nameless and a newspaper who shall remain nameless. I called her and I asked her that question. He goes, you know, like a year ago, one of the syndicate reps left the rate book here. She said, if you want that, I'll send it to you. I'm like, absolutely. So,
wow, you hit the gold mine.
She sent me the rate sheet, you know, what they're supposed to charge. But really the big thing with that is that I haven't even looked at that in a couple of years because it really plays no – it has no relevance at all because the syndicates are always making deals. You know, they've got bazillion comics and puzzles and columns and all kinds of stuff. So they'll say, well, if you pick this one up, we'll give you a discount. Or if you take 10 of our strips, we'll give you it for this price. And if you drop that syndicate, we'll give you this price. And they're just constantly wheeling and dealing and trying to get as many spaces as they can. And so really what I do now is I just match, you know, I'll tell the newspapers, I'll match what you're giving the syndicates for other new to you strips. And there's not, you know, that's probably the best way to do it. Cause I'm not undercutting anybody. I'm not overcutting anybody. Yeah. They're going to get a better deal than if I just, you know, came up with a regular price. But then if I just came up with a regular price, you know, there's a lot of them wouldn't pick us because the syndicates have given them so many good deals over the years that they're just way under where they should be, I guess, right now.
So When you guys got together and started working on this, how'd you guys come to an understanding of, you know, objectives and things to, you know, milestones to reach? Again, there's a lot of, you know, cartoonists out there that don't believe the syndication route is possible for them, but maybe there's something, you know, they'd like to do something on their own, but maybe aren't, you know, they can't do the sales themselves and haven't even considered maybe bringing someone else in or even how to do that. What were you guys looking at when you, you know, what was that conversation like?
Want me to jump in there, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'll give you my side. Actually, it was, I just basically, maybe it was foolish, but I basically trusted Bill.
It was foolish.
But Bill is really good at coming up with plans, and he is an idea guy, and he thinks out of the box, which I think is his biggest strength, and he can come up with ideas that other entities that who have been in the business for much longer have never come up with or didn't have faith in, and Bill will put a twist on it and make it work. So because of that, and I had known Bill for a number of years before the whole partnership here with the cartooning, I trusted that he probably had some good ideas and knew what he was going to do. So I kind of went into it blindly, and I didn't realize that Bill was also going into it blindly, and I'm glad I didn't know at the time. But he's done a fine job, obviously. Okay, Bill, I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, and it was one of those, you know, neither of us knew what we were doing. And the first trip, you know, I did a sales trip, and we basically just decided that I'd go on a sales trip and see what happens and then take it from there. So we didn't have any, like, firm commitment other than, you know, he said, you know, I'll pay you if you get me into papers, but we didn't have anything really firm until after that first trip because, you know, we didn't know. And in Alaska, I picked up a few papers just by calling because he's been, you know, he was a fixture in Alaska for 15 years. And aside from that, Sarah something, Connor something. Sarah, anyway, Sarah lady that was in politics, he was the kind of, you know, like the local celebrity here in Alaska. So some of the papers that I picked up, you know, I would, one of them, the easiest one, I called up the guy and I said, hey, are you familiar with Tundra? And he said, yes. And I said, you interested in running in a paper? And he said, yes, how much? And I was like, I don't know. But that was the first one. But some of them in Alaska were that easy because everybody knew who he was. And the first trip out of state, you know, I took 3 weeks and drove it, you know, around from basically Portland across Montana, you know, through, actually up through Vancouver and then down through Denver and down south of Denver and over. We made just a big circle and spent 3 weeks doing it. And that was when we found out that, hey, people actually like this trip. You know, it's not just me and Chad and a few Alaskans that you know. Even though the editors, we actually only got one paper originally off of that trip, but the feedback was really positive. So it was from really after the first trip that we decided, hey, let's try and make a go of this.
So when it came to splitting the revenues and stuff, I mean, did you just look at the syndicate model, or was it based on a different percentage?
It's based on a different percentage because, you know, at the time, okay, like you said, I was unemployed and had no money, so it wasn't really like that, but I didn't have the money to fund my own trips or anything. So we came up with a little different percentage. So basically, he covers all my expenses, and then everything's different. We just have a different split. Like if it's a newspaper, if it's that's one percentage. If it's like a book deal, that's another percentage. You know, licensing is a different percentage, and a lot of places I go, I'll sell his books, and I get a different percentage off of that too. You know, if I get an account that carries his books, so there's all a whole big range of book distributors. You know, I get a percentage of that too, and you know, so pretty much anything we do, I get a cut on. But we kind of arranged all that in the very beginning based on, okay, here's what the syndicates do. You know, I'm sort of acting like a syndicate, but not paying my own way.
What kind of changes have you seen, if any, in dealing with the newspapers or in picking up new clients because of the economy or because of the industry itself, changes in the industry.
Yeah, it's certainly not the healthiest industry, I guess. Every paper is different. You know, some of them are doing fine, some of them aren't. And, you know, there's the biggest change, you know, they're most of the papers that are going away are two-market papers, and like Denver. So the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News, and the Rocky Mountain News left, but still the Denver Post. And Seattle, same thing, the Times and the Post Intelligencer. So one of them is going to remain. There's very few places where, you know, there's no paper left. But, you know, papers are shrinking, and comic sections are shrinking. And, yeah, that certainly doesn't help what we're doing.
Chad alluded to the fact that, you know, he was making additional income from the merchandising, and he was just in, you know, just working off his local market. So maybe that's an area where people need to focus on and understand that it's not just about getting the strip out, but the strip is, you know, a vehicle to get people in your door through your store door, for example, and then try to get them to buy, you know, other things that you have to offer based on, you know, their interest in your strip.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm a big fan of that. I think there's a lot of talented cartoonists out there who will never get syndicated because it's just, as Bill said, it's not the healthiest market in the world. And even when it was, the chances of getting syndicated are like being an astronaut that lands on the moon. And so I think there's a lot of talented cartoonists out there. If they would just work their regional area and did it right, out with the merchandise, the books, the calendars, the shirts, the toilet paper, whatever, they could make a pretty good healthy living and not have to worry about trying to branch out nationwide. So there's a lot of opportunity, I think, out there for a lot of cartoonists. They just got to put aside the old thoughts of what was success, you know, nationally syndicated, and start realizing that there can be a lot of success in different avenues, such as the regional market.
I was going to say the regional market also gives you a launch point to get to that, because you're you know, like Chad in Alaska. I mean, he was very well established here, but people come here and they move from here and they still, you know, they got to know his strip here. And a lot of people come through Alaska and they buy the books and the calendars and the T-shirts and they see a strip in the paper, and then they ask for it in their newspapers. You know, so they'll go down and they'll say, they'll email their paper, what about Tundra? And, of course, at the time, nobody had ever heard of Tundra. But then, you know, when I came along, he wasn't, you know, he was mostly unknown out there. But there were a lot of Tundra fans around because of his regional start, you know. And there's a lot of people who would write to their papers and a lot of people who would still buy his books, you know, over the Internet and stuff because of that. So you're building, not only are you making a living and, you know, doing the regional thing, but you're building a fan base, and, you know, people move, and people, you just never know who it, you know, one of those people might be the editor of a newspaper, and then they see it and go back and say, hey, I might try Tundra in our paper or whatever. So it gives a launch point too, if you ever want to go that route, because it's a whole lot easier to get started when people know you, or when you have some kind of base. You know, even if that base was only five or six papers here in Alaska, you have five or six papers here in Alaska and a bunch of fans. So that is hugely helpful.
You know, I'm a big proponent of any artist getting out where either they're going to either meet people, you know, that would be interested in buying their stuff and their creative property, or industry conferences where they can rub elbows with other successful people who are already doing what they're doing. And this kind of leads into your upcoming event, your Success in Comics seminar. I wanted to talk a little bit about that because, you know, I speak to artists that are wanting to do things and lack direction. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for people who have the comics or are developing their own comics or graphic novel or whatever it might be. And don't have the direction to market it or figure out where to start with it. Tell me a little bit about the Success in Comics seminar. How long has it been going on? What's it about?
Chad, you want to start or you want me to handle that?
Go ahead and jump in there, only because I'm in city traffic now. You hear me scream and you hear a crash, just continue on. I'll be okay.
I'm going to hang up real quick. I don't want to be held responsible.
Yes. Yeah, we're at least muted, so we don't have to hear you scream. And you know, so the seminar started. This is our third year, and you know, we started doing it. We get asked all the time for something like this. You know, people would always call me or email Chad and want to know how he got into so many papers on his own without the syndicates and all that kind of stuff. And so we just kind of came up with the idea of putting together a seminar to help people make money or to help people be successful. You know, that's hence the name, Success in Comics Seminar. But what we did is, you know, we started thinking, okay, I started looking around, and I, of course, had gotten to know or heard other people in the industry that had done really well. And what we thought would do is put together different speakers in that all did really well in different areas of cartooning. And you know, one of the things I hate, you know, you get on the Daily Cartoonist, love the Daily Cartoonist, by the way, but you whenever there's this web versus print debate, people get all, you know, defensive and all that. And I'm thinking, you know, to me that whole argument is stupid, because I want to know how the web guys are doing it, because I want Tundra to make money there. And they should want to know how the print guys are doing it, because they should want to, you know, to me it's like a buffet. There's all these different ways to make money, and it would be nice to have an income stream from all of them. So, you know, if print starts dying, well, that's not the end of the world. And, you know, if something happens, you know, it doesn't matter, because you've got money coming in from all these different areas, whether it's, you know, selling books or calendars or merchandising, licensing, something off the web, something off print. You know, there's just so many different possibilities out there. And really, you should be trying to get, in my opinion anyway, you should be trying to get money from all those areas. So, you know, we kind of put together a group of speakers based on that, because, you know, for one, I wanted to know, too, you know. We had, the first year, we had Andrew Feinstein, who did really well getting in college papers. I want to get in college newspapers, you know, and they're tough, you know. They're harder than the other papers. And he did a fantastic job getting girls in sports into, you know, he's like 200 college newspapers, and you know, that's not an easy task. So, you know, a part of it, people are saying, well, why are you helping other people compete with you? And I'm like, well, I'm not. You know, I'm trying to learn from other people. So if I can share my knowledge and they can share their knowledge, then, you know, basically all of us win, you know. So that's kind of how I looked at it. But, yeah, and we had, you know, Mark Anderson was there, and he has an incredible website where he does really well selling his images on his website. And it's not a – a lot of people also think we're anti-syndicate. We're not, by any stretch. Just the way we started, you know, fortunately, they all turned Chad down multiple times in some cases before I came along, because if they had said yes, I'd be, you know, living in a box under an overpass here in Anchorage, and it's cold.
There's still time.
That's true.
Not too late.
Anyway. So yeah, it has nothing to do with anti-syndicate. It's how do you make money yourself, not just syndicating to papers, but in anything. And you know, whether it's licensing books, web, everything. You know, that's kind of the idea. And of course, we have a syndicate person there every year too to talk about what they're looking for. Because still, ultimately, even if you're doing it on your own, most of these guys want to be syndicated. So. And it's a good way, you know, we have, you know, one of our, you know, in my mind, one of the best features of the seminar is our syndicate boss, whoever it is, you know, it's this year, it's Amy Longo again, she'll sit down one-on-one with any cartoonist and go over their work and, you know, offer suggestions or advice or whatever. But, you know, there's that chance that she might be your, you know, you might be her next syndicated comic strip, because where else can you get one-on-one time with a syndicate boss? I mean, most of them don't even call you back or email you back, or, you know, they send you a rejection letter 6 months later or something, and that's all you ever hear from them. But yeah, to have that to just to be able to get your strip in front of the person who actually makes that decision.
So who is this event for? I mean, obviously the comic strip creator or the comic cartoon creator. Would it be applicable to someone starting a graphic novel or a comic book artist or who wants to try to market something online?
It probably would. And we actually had, the first year we had a children's book guy who was there. And he said he really enjoyed it and it was very helpful to him because basically anything you're doing, pretty much any kind of marketing, there's something there that is going to apply to you. So if you're trying to sell a book, if you're trying to just be an illustrator or a cartoonist, whatever, we're going to have people will explain basically how to make money in different parts of market, and a lot of them will apply to almost anything. You know, how to market your business, how to market yourself. You know, we talk about how to or build a Facebook fan base, and how to make money off of them too. You know, it's not going to be valuable only to cartoonists.
You have to go in with an open mind, and you can pretty much apply that knowledge to almost anything that you're doing.
Right, and yeah, you never know. I mean, it's just that little idea that somebody has, and you think, oh wow, I could apply that to Tundra, or if I did this, I could make that work with Tundra, or whatever. I mean, you get your, like, for me anyway, the ideas or the inspiration for an idea has come from everything. You know, it's like, and really it's just kind of weeding out all, you know, it's like you kick it around and then think, okay, that's not going to work for me, but maybe this will or something. And, you know, but yes, I love being in there because, you know, in our social get-togethers, you just sit and chat with somebody and everybody's telling you, hey, I did this, and what do you think of this idea? And you think, I could make that work for me. Or even if an idea didn't work for them, you can say, you know, maybe you have a different twist that will make it work. Or same with that. Maybe you tried something and they tried something and some combination of the two would actually really work. So, yeah, it's just a huge idea farm. You know, you just, so many brilliant people there, so many incredibly talented cartoonists, and, you know, it's just really good to be there and interact and figure out what everybody else is doing and try and figure out how can I apply that to me, or how can I apply that to our situation and make it profitable.
Yeah, you know, and the thing too, I think about conferences like yours is that, you know, you don't have to come away with, you know, 100 different strategies to make it worthwhile. I mean, you can come home with one thing that you can, you know, that you can concentrate on and focus on and implement it, and it can be the difference between going down the tube or you know, staying afloat, you know, and making the trip more than worthwhile. Bill, I was speaking to you the other day, and that I was promoting this event, and just because I think it's a great, you know, opportunity for people. There was actually several that contacted me and said, well, you know, I'd benefit hugely from going to something like this because I'm really looking to, I really want my visibility, and I really want to make this work, and I want to really make this my day job, and they're really passionate about what they're doing, but I can't afford, you know, the event, flying out of the event. I'm kind of caught in a catch-22 where I'd like to go, and my business can't grow without this information, but I can't afford to go to the event. What would you say to, you know, to someone, to maybe a cartoonist or an illustrator who's on the fence, they're wanting to grow their audience, don't quite know how, and they're struggling with this issue of not having enough money to maybe attend your event?
Yeah, that's a tough one because, you know, I've been in the position where, you know, you absolutely can't afford something that you have to have. But if I would say, if at all possible, find a way. I mean, and not sales. You know, people complain. So I've heard a lot of people say, you know, it's just too expensive. Your seminar is too expensive. Our seminar is $375. That is not expensive for, I mean, the people, the opportunities you're getting, you know, aside from hearing me and Chad, you've got Amy Lago, and we've got, I can name all the speakers, but, you know, we've got just this huge, I mean, where else are you going to go and get that kind of resources you know, Tom Gammel and Tom Richmond, the MCS president, and all these people are going to be there talking and telling you how they do it, and for $375, I mean, that's crazy. And so anyway, it's this is not a money-making venture for us. You know, really, we're lucky to not lose our butts on these seminars, because, you know, we don't charge that much money, and we have to pay for everybody to come out, and we fly them and their wives or husbands or whatever out and put them up in the hotel, and you know, we have their social get-togethers, and cartoonists drink a lot, so, you know, it costs a lot of money. So this isn't really, we're doing this, first of all, because we enjoy it, but really it's because it helps us. You know, we get a lot of ideas from this that help Tundra, and, you know, so our goal is to not lose money on any of them, but, you know, people have made comments like that, yeah, we see where the real money is. Well, if this is where the real money is, we'd be charging a whole lot more for it, because, you know, just we have to have a lot of people there just to break even. And, but anyway, it's, I would say find a way. You know, if there's a will, there's a way, and if you're complaining about $375, then, you know, how serious, I guess, can you be? Or, you know, I don't know. To me, that's not, it's just not a big enough obstacle to be an obstacle. And
hey, listen, you know, and even, you know, even making hand over fist over this thing, it doesn't matter, because, I mean, you guys, if you're putting out information that can change cartoonizer, or, you know, get them making money or get them closer to the goal, it doesn't really matter what you guys are making. So to me, that's inconsequential. So that really shouldn't even factor in. They shouldn't really care. The only thing they should really care about, for anyone, you know, considering or understanding or this is a value to them, is that, you know, this is something that they're going to gain something from. If $375 or $400, I mean, it's not an amount of money that's so far-fetched that people can't do it if they really wanted to. And I think that, you know, as a comic creator, if you're really serious about making this your business, about making it full-time and being able to leave a part-time gig or whatever it is, if you're not willing to find a way to put yourself in a position where you're going to get the information that's going to help you, you really need to reconsider whether this is something that you should be doing or not. That's just my take. It's a little harsh, maybe, but it's just my point. It's, you know, from my experience and a lot of people that I've spoken to, is just that people just aren't serious enough or really committed enough to need to be done to get them to where they say they want to be.
That's well said, actually. And that's one thing I've learned with since Bill has arrived on the scene. If you don't take chances, you're not going to go anywhere. If Bill hadn't shown up, I'd still be in Five Papers, Alaska. Of course, I'd be golfing a lot more, but I'd only be in the Five Papers in Alaska. And Bill has really opened my eyes to the whole if you don't take a chance, you're not going to go anywhere kind of mentality. And so what you said is dead on, I think.
Don't always work, you know. Ideally, you want to minimize the ones that don't or don't sink a whole lot of money or effort into some of them, you know, just the little ideas that come up, because some of them end up being, you know, too time-consuming or too much of a pain or, you know, don't work at all. But there's hopefully there's not as many of those as the ones that do work, so.
Well, you know, another thing to consider is, you know, you're going straight to the source of people that are using these strategies and information to make them successful, versus not having it and then struggling for a year or 2 years and then, you know, trying on your own through trial and error, trying to figure things out. How much time are you investing in trying to find or reinvent the wheel yourself? How much is your time worth there, you know, and how much time are you losing? Because, I mean, you know, the money back. What you can't make back is the year or 2 years that you've flushed down the toilet trying to figure something out and realize, damn, I haven't made progress. You know, and the $300 or $400 or $500, whatever it happens to be, is, you know, you can make that back. There's ways to make the money back.
Right. Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is You know, the newspaper industry is not, it's definitely not growing. So the longer you wait, the less there's going to be to get in on. And, you know, and who knows, I'm not one of those people that sees the newspaper industry going away completely, but I think it'll change and all that. But, you know, we got in when things were starting to go down, and people always asked me, how has this affected you? And I said, well, it hasn't, because I didn't know any better. So, but now, you know, once you're in it and you see papers, you know, papers are folding and papers are going to 3 times a week and papers are cutting the comic sections, all that does is make it harder for me and everybody else to, you know, get a spot in that paper. So, yeah, the longer you wait, the less opportunity you're going to have from there.
Even if the papers are having a tough time and there are fewer and fewer papers, the opportunity for other venues is rising, such as the Internet, obviously. And that's why we talk about that at the seminars as well, is talk about how to make money other than the newspapers, because there are a lot of great opportunities coming up. You just have to – and it'd be great to be – you know, on the cusp of it and try to jump in there at the beginning, such as the Internet, and as far as, you know, making money off the Internet with your comics. Because that's obviously something that's that eludes a lot of people. But at the same time, there's a lot of very inspiring success stories out there. And some of them, of course, will be our speakers who are able to make money on this new medium of the Internet.
Chad, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Despite, regardless of the newspapers going, there are other opportunities to, you know, to take advantage of, you know, so it behooves anybody to kind of get over there and get the information that they need in order to be able to move their careers in the direction that they want, right? Chad, where can they find your work if they wanted to buy the books, see the gazillions of merchandise you have available?
So of course,
they don't drive all the way out to Anchorage to find it.
Yeah, if you can't make it to Anchorage, Speaking of websites, you can always go to tundracomics.com, and there's on the homepage, on the very front page, you might have to scroll down a little bit. There's an icon that says Success in Comics Seminar. You can click on that, and you can read about all the speakers that are going to be at the seminar, as well as what they're going to be talking about, and why they're famous, and where the seminar is going to be held at. Of course, that's Annapolis this time, and so there's lots of information about the seminar there. That's the main thing. And of course, if you did want to buy any of the Tundra merchandise, there's a place you can go for that too, of course, because I'm always willing to take money from people. But the main thing is the seminar. They're just so fun. It's an incredible time to get together with a whole bunch of cartoonists and hang out together, and that's a rare opportunity for most. I know it is for me here in Alaska. There's not a lot of cartoonists up here. So for me, it's a big social event. So the more people we get there, the better, and it's going to be a good time. I know that.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you for me today. I appreciate you taking the time, especially you, Chad, since we're driving on the road, and hope we didn't put your life in any kind of jeopardy. In the process.
I'm in the parking lot now, so I made it.
So you might be more danger in the parking lot than you might be in the highway.
There's a shifty guy standing about 20 feet away. I'm a little nervous.
Maybe. All right, Chad, Bill, thank you very much.
You bet.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Carlos. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.